It's me, Patrick. Welcome back to the show. Today we have my buddy Trey George. Trey is the CEO of A Color Story, which is an amazing photo editing app and so much more. The company just recently launched a brand new app called Film. All that links and whatnot will be in the show notes. But Trey has an interesting life. Trey has moved around in different cities. Currently lives in Springfield, Missouri with his wife, Emma, who her and her sister started something that is the reason that we even have A Color Story called A Beautiful Mess. And I'm excited for you to meet Trey and to hear a little bit about his background, his work, his wisdom, his perspective. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy today's episode. Another interview episode, obviously. And again, we will just kind of throw out different episodes each and every week. We'll probably sometime in the near future have a pop culture episode, some more homilies and quote episodes too. Don't forget to like the podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you're using iTunes or if you can go to iTunes and rate our podcast, leave a comment. Those things really do help. That helps get us listed higher in the rankings and helps others find out who we are and what we're trying to do here. And if you have social media, whether it's Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, I would love it if you would post about this episode or other episodes so that your friends and family and coworkers can enjoy what we're doing here on the Patrick Podcast. Yeah. So other than that, I think that's all we got. Let's check in with Ben. Ben, what's up? What's happening over there?
Hey, Patrick. Nice job, man. With the intro today. It was really nice. Very, very normal.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, I've got a fact about
food. Why I knew this was going to happen.
More of just an interesting fact. It's not weird like our normal facts are. This is about, as you know, there's this like idea of bringing an apple to your teacher.
Yeah.
To school, right?
Because I don't know why.
So I'm going to tell you why.
Oh!
Yeah.
Look at this.
That was great. Great prompt. So in the 16th and 18th through 18th centuries, teachers' salaries were really low.
Yeah.
And so students would bring them apples to try to help compensate for that.
What?
It was just like something that they could eat because
what?
Their salaries were low. It was like a nice way of saying, hey, we appreciate what you're doing, even though you're not being fully compensated.
Here's an apple.
Right. Which, yeah.
Not a casserole, not some chicken tenders, but here's
an apple.
It's
like their version of like taking them out to a meal. You know what I mean? Like,
so back then, people just had a meal was an apple.
I didn't live back then. Let's start the episode.
Here we go. Trey George. Enjoy it. So, Trey.
So, welcome. Patrick.
Hey.
Hey.
What's up?
Not a lot. This is great. I like this.
This is good. So, hey, you are the CEO.
Yeah.
Product lead
mm-hmm.
for a company called The Color Story.
Yes. Well, A Color Story.
What did I say?
You said the, which, I mean, that's fine.
Did you drop the?
I mean, no, this isn't Facebook. Which maybe we should. I feel like if I were to talk to Justin Timberlake, he would tell me to drop the A.
The A. Just be Color Story.
Just be Color Story.
Yeah.
You know what's cool? $1 billion.
Yeah. So tell us, so the people who are tuning in, some will be very familiar with A Color Story. Some will have no clue at all about this, which is fascinating considering what I would say is the success of this company and the things that kind of fall underneath it, but it's still barely, it's still unknown to a lot of folks. So just kind of give like a, here is our elevator pitch. Here is what my company, what I'm in charge of and what we do.
Well, a color story probably at its very top line, if we want to be all inspirational and, you know, kind of the vision statement or whatever, is to make creativity accessible. And the idea being, you know, we want it so you, if you want a photo to look a certain way or you want to make a certain thing, you don't necessarily have to have the most high-end equipment or the most high-end software to make it happen. But at a more literal, tangible, functional level, Color Story started out as a photo editing app. That's what we really are.
Right.
And so it's just, we do filters, we do effects, we have a pretty large suite of editing tools like brightness, contrast, curves, etc. And then we also created a sister app to it called a Design Kit, which, you know, if a Color Story is the Photoshop, a Design Kit is Illustrator. And right. It's again, unlike Adobe, which makes great products, but we tried to simplify that process quite a bit. So rather than having to know exactly, you know, I think my highlights are too harsh here, I think the blues in my shadows are a little too much. Right. We give you a quick path to get that done. But I mean, at this point, photo editing apps are so common, people know what a filter is. And so that's really like, that is our bread and butter, is that we do these filters, and specifically we'll partner up with influencers or photographers that we find really talented or inspiring, and we'll bring them in to help us like art direct some filters, and then we partner with them to release a pack of filters or whatever. And so now at this point, a Color Story started out with quite a few filters, but we're up to like well over 300 through these partnerships. I think we've partnered with something like 40 different influencers and photographers to make it happen.
So that to me is very interesting, because it really speaks to this idea that just because someone's done the thing, a thing, whatever the thing is, doesn't mean that someone else can't come in and do another thing that's in the same, maybe the same sandbox as that thing, right?
Definitely.
And so, like you mentioned, like there's Adobe, there's other photo editing apps. So for you, when you and the team got together and you said, okay, what are we going to do next?
Yeah.
Why yes to this and not another sandbox, whatever that could have been, right?
Well, answer's twofold. One, we like to expand on what we know, and we had created a photo app before, one called A Beautiful Mess. And so we wanted to play a little bit more in that space, so we understood it. So that kind of, that narrowed our focus a little bit. So we wanted to keep working within the photo space. And then the big piece that we saw missing as far as the market was concerned was a style of editing. And so the thing about the photo category, which is way different than a lot of the other categories of apps, which are a little bit more technologically or led by technological differentiation, this is a lot more of an aesthetic differentiation. And that's like, you'll find entire apps that come out, they don't do anything new. They just create a new aesthetic. Like Fujicam is like incredibly popular right now. That is the easiest app to make. Like you could take a course and be done, take a coding course, be done with it in 3 weeks and build Fujicam if you wanted to. But the idea and the aesthetic of it is what's so brilliant and what's so smart and why it took off so much. And so that's what's kind of fun about this space, is that it's a little bit more about the aesthetic difference that you create. So to come back to what we were doing, at the time that we launched, there was a certain style of editing that we saw that was really popular. And it was something that was it was really bright, it was really colorful, kind of high contrast, had a big pop to it. And the other like aesthetic leaders in the category, which would be like Afterlight or VSCO, they weren't doing that. They were doing, and they were doing a more faded look, a more vintage look, a more, you know, kind of a moodier look, which again, fantastic products and they do wonderful things, but they just weren't addressing this because that wasn't really their focus. And so we're like, well, why don't we take a stab at that? And it helped quite a bit that this style happened to be one that big Instagram accounts, influencers, and photographers were really into.
Right.
And so we were able to service, you know, a category of people that had a huge reach. So if they liked it, then they would pass it on to their whole following, and then their following would like it. And that's how it all, that's kind of how the fire was lit. And that's how, God, I guess we're up to like 11 and a half million installs. It's crazy. Yeah, it's wild. It's wild.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's wild.
So, I mean, the first question that comes to mind hearing 11 million is there ever been in your mind, like, what would it be like to host an event and anyone and people come and we almost like a conference, like a, yeah, or like a giant meetup of a color story. Like, it, I feel like there's just such opportunity there, yeah, with 11 million people who have downloaded this thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair with, you know, app development, it's or not app development, but just apps in general, and most products, it's kind of a leaky bucket, right? Like, you're going to try this for a little,
sure,
bit, you're going to try that for a little bit.
Absolutely.
So 11 million is the big fun number we like to say. But yeah, we get about a million people in the app every month, which is certainly, which is something we're very proud of, obviously. But as far as bringing them all to one place around an app, I mean, it's a very, I don't know, my opinion, it's a very, it's very quick, it's a very small experience. And while yes, they really, really like the app, and yes, they really, really like the product, as far as getting everybody in one place, we've got, I mean, we have users all over the world.
And well, yeah.
And so to try to get there,
but really, people, like, love to, that's the thing, that's, yeah, the thing these days.
But you spread out a million people across the globe, like a million, right, monthly active users across the globe, and all of a sudden it becomes a lot thinner. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You'll have maybe 100 people here, 50 people there,
sure,
5 people here, so on and so forth.
So, okay, you are now overseeing these apps.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of CEO of this little company.
Yep.
That's attached to a larger thing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but attached
to a beautiful mess.
Beautiful mess, yeah, okay, yeah. Which is like been a, you know, that's kind of was the genesis of this,
exactly,
of this whole thing. And we could talk some about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm interested in now is here you are. You live in Springfield, Missouri. What?
It's a great town. I love it.
It's okay. Like, nothing against Springfield.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. But, I mean, 16-year-old Trey.
Mm-hmm.
What does 16-year-old Trey say about Trey sitting in this chair right now?
What's an app, I guess?
But yeah, does he even think, okay, maybe not app, but does he think, I'm going to get into web design and technology?
Yeah.
Like, does that, like, how does that even, what's that even look like for you? What's that journey?
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in high school, I was really lazy. I was really lazy. My dad actually made the comment to me around the time like my career had finally gotten started and I was doing okay. He made the comment. He's like, you know, I was really worried about you there for a second. And I was like, what? Because you think I'd ever find a girlfriend? He's just like, no, I thought you'd be fine. Or I was like, wasn't worried. I mean, a little about that, but not as much. But he's like, you were just so lazy. I couldn't get you to do anything. He would like ask me to go to the grocery store with him or something.
Yeah.
He just because he wanted a little company.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to have a little,
yeah,
help.
Yeah, a little help.
And I was just like,
little helper.
And my dad, you know, he wasn't like the demanding type. He's
right.
Just like, hey, do you want to come with me to the grocery store? And it's like, no, thanks. My favorite story. He hates that I tell this because it makes him sound like a real jackass. But he's wonderful. He's like, he's so patient. He's so sweet and kind and all this. But I found his breaking point one day.
Yeah.
He'd come home and I think I'm just like sitting in my boxers watching like Nickelodeon as probably a 16-year-old.
And you watched Nickelodeon when you were 16?
Dude, I watched cartoons for way too long. Way too long. Anyway, so he comes home and I'm just like watching TV and the place is just wrecked. Yeah. Like it's just, there's just, it's the living room. Like it's this family room. He just cleaned it up that morning and he comes home and he sees all this, there's wrappers and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just sitting there like watching TV and kind of like looking around him as he's picking things up. He's like,
right.
And then he like leans down and there's a bowl, like a dirty bowl that's lodged in the AC vent. And I was just like, and he's just, it just lets out the biggest sigh as he's picking it up. He's like, Trey, can you just help me for a second? And I was just like, that's not my mess. That was my response.
It's not my mess.
And he takes this bowl and keep in mind, we have like this squishy carpet that's like really like real squish. And he just throws it on the ground and it busts in two. He's just like, can you? And I like, I'd never see my dad lose his temper like that. I'm like,
wow.
I gotta start helping. But sorry, total derail. Yeah, anyway.
That's hilarious.
I was the laziest.
Whose mess was it?
Probably mostly mine. I mean, let's be real. I mean, I have two sisters, but I sucked pretty bad. Yeah. Anyway, so he, I was very lazy. And then I thought I wanted to be like a, first I wanted to be a math teacher and then I kind of wasn't into that anymore. Then I thought I wanted to be a dentist. And here's my reasoning. It was very lazy. It was, I've seen my dentist and my orthodontist. They don't do anything. So all they have to do is like show up for like a couple minutes and be like, yeah, that looks good. And then they leave. And then they have these other people to do everything for them. And I'm like, that job sounds awesome. So
oh, man.
I try to do that. And
that's amazing.
And so, but then I go to college and they're like, okay, if you want to be pre-dentistry, that means you need to be either a biology or chemistry major. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And one semester, and I'm like,
you're
oh,
like, nope,
no,
nope.
You have to major in science to do this. What?
That's amazing.
But college, in all honesty, was a real like coming of age thing for me. I ended up I double majored in philosophy and journalism. But I worked a marketing job all throughout college. So I didn't really know what I wanted to be.
Wait. You go from biology to like, oh, naturally philosophy. That's naturally what I do next.
I mean, yeah. What? Yeah, right? That's the trajectory. That's how you get into philosophy. You start with a semester of.
So who was the cute girl in philosophy that inspired you
It's funny you say that. Uh-oh. My wife was also a philosophy major. We sat next to each other. So, and that's sweet. We dated only for a little bit in college, but then, yeah, we kind of really gave it the old college try when we got older.
Mm. I don't
yeah.
have this.
Does that work?
Sure.
Is that,
we'll let that
am
math
I mixing,
work.
Am I
we'll
mixing let... metaphors here?
So, okay. So you major in that, worked yeah. a marketing job all through school.
Worked a marketing job all through school. And then when I come out of school, I'm all of a sudden, I've become responsible a little bit. Like in my brain, I'm like, oh no, like I grew up like pretty comfortable my whole life, which was, you know, a great privilege. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to give that up. I don't know how to do anything. And my dad is, or like my parents are not going to pay for my life forever. Like they're going to cut me off very right. soon if I don't like, if I don't do something about it. So I kind of just got gnarly urgency in me to find any job I could. And so because I'd worked, and when I say marketing, I was working for a call center. It was like a market research call center. So we'd call you and like ask you if you wanted to take a survey about, you know, right.
That was a very nice marketing spin. I worked in marketing in college. We're at a call center.
A market research
call
center.
That was marketing research.
They used it for marketing.
I had a headset on.
I'll have you know, everybody above me got fired, and they eventually promoted me by default because I was pretty cheap. So,
and
so yeah,
a white man
that probably helped.
We need a white guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. So I from there. But from that, because I was like a supervisor and then I was doing like some data analysis stuff, more right. data entry, but I would call it data analysis. Now that I think about it. Oh, man, I really did spin
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you did.
That's because I worked in marketing.
You worked in marketing.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. And so I do that, and I was. I spun the hell out of it on my resume, and I think I had a two-page the only time I've ever had a two-page resume in my life was right when I graduated college, which is right. hilarious. When I had done the least, right. I had the most on my resume.
Right.
But yeah, I was doing everything I could to be like, I'm really responsible, I promise. And I, you know, obviously there's not a whole lot you can do with philosophy unless you go into law, or unless you want to teach philosophy. And right. I thought I wanted to go into law for a second, but it came back to that whole being hard thing. And, but in all seriousness, like I wasn't sure that was the right path for me for a whole lot of reasons. It just seemed like when I would really talk to people who worked in law, it did not seem like a fun job.
Sure.
And then I knew I didn't want to be a teacher because I didn't want to go through all of that. And then journalism, I actually had a fantastic journalism professor she's like why, her name's Dr. Mary Jane Pardue. She's why I know how to write at all. But funny enough, she talked me out of it. Not on purpose. She was just really real about what working in journalism was like. And especially at the time, back whenever staff writers was a more available position, because it's more like more and more just freelance gigs. And so it's just like, oh man, I don't want to do that at all. And, and then all my experience was in marketing. So
yeah, obviously. Yeah.
So I was starting to look for jobs like that, and I had a friend who worked for an ad agency. I started working for that ad agency, and then that started to give me like a total crash course in business. And I've started to understand a little bit more and more, little by little. And I probably worked for agencies for I think 4 years. I mean, that's how you and I met,
because right.
I got recruited by an agency out here in Nashville. That I was working for a year and a half. And then Emma and I, my wife, met, like, it was over Thanksgiving when I was back in Springfield, and I got drinks with her sister, and she just happened to come along, and right. kind of and the rest is history a little bit there.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. You kind of brought this into yeah. it a little bit. Were you born in? You weren't born in Springfield.
No, I was born in Texas.
Texas.
Yeah,
but grew up in Springfield.
Yes,
went to high school in Springfield.
Yeah,
went to college
Springfield.
In Springfield.
Yes.
So you graduate from you've kind of created this life in yeah. Springfield, Missouri. Then you take this journey, and then you end up living in, or you move to Texas for a hot minute.
Yeah,
to Austin
for like 3 months. Yeah,
3 months to kind of. Mm-hmm. Now, was that your first time leaving?
Yes.
So yeah. you moved to Texas for 3 months.
Yes.
And then go back to Springfield? Or
yes. Yeah, basically what had happened was that agency that I got a job at right out of college, I got that job in 2008.
Right.
I don't know if you remember, but that was a big, big market crash.
A thing happened.
Something happened. You might say. And not only was I was working in marketing, which was one of the first budgets to get cut, but I was working in business to business marketing. So absolutely going to get cut. They're just going to put everything on to sales at that
right.
point. And so, they laid off, I think in my year there, they laid off close to 75% of the company. No exaggeration. But they didn't tell my bosses that they did that. And so they were just like, surprise, you don't have to write anymore. And they're kind of pissed off. They threw a little bit of a fit. And then they offered me my job back like a couple weeks later, but I was already on my way down to Austin. And I'm like, eh.
I'm good. And
then,
yeah.
But then I go down to Austin and everybody is moving to Austin at that point. Like mm-hmm. what Nashville has been going through these past few years, Austin was going through
That's
at
right.
that time.
That's right.
And so I'm in Austin trying to get, I'm throwing my resume at anything, and all I'm getting are informational interviews. The only job I got was working for this Indian handbag company. Like it was based in India.
Yeah. That sounds real sketchy.
Yeah. It was like, it was cool. Like it was my sister's neighbor, this guy named Sunit. So funny, so charismatic,
right.
awesome dude. But he really hated his job. And I didn't know that until after he hired me. Cause then when I got there, cause he was like in charge of the office there.
Right.
And it was just like, he was a completely different person. Like when we're hanging out, having drinking wine and having dinner, he's just like full on blast. When we were there at work, he was just, I think he was just facing the same economic struggles that everybody else was.
Absolutely.
And he was stressed out by it. And so it was just not the best environment in general. And so I'm just like, I don't, and then ultimately when I got in there, I'm like, I'm not even useful to this. Like you're just wasting money on me.
Right.
I know you're doing this as a favor to my sister. Let's just call it good. Thank you.
Right.
And then I called up Noble and I'm like, hey, is that job still available? And so then I moved back to Springfield. So That's how that happened.
So I'm what I'm curious about is, there's a lot of people that will potentially hear this and have lived a similar life like you in that I was raised in this city. I've gone to school in this city. I feel comfortable in this city. But You did a thing that a lot of people think about doing, but then they don't do, which is you make the first leap and move to Austin temporarily. Yeah. But then you make a larger move.
Yeah.
To Nashville, Tennessee, where you don't know many people. No one, right?
No, not really.
Yeah. I had a couple connections.
Yeah.
So what did you, and now you're back in Springfield, but What did you learn in making those moves and in making the really big move to Nashville? What did you learn about yourself, about being in a space that is, because you know, like, Springfield's your jam. Like you are, that's, you just can drive with your eyes closed and go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
What was that? I mean, what did you learn in those years?
I'd say both of them was like a lesson in healthy loneliness, and not to get too, deep on you, but it was just like, with Springfield, you know everybody, and I was part of the music scene, and that music scene was like so tight knit. You could like, there were like, you know, four bars total that everybody in the music scene would hang out at. So if you were I wouldn't even make plans on Friday and Saturday nights. I would just go to the places.
Right.
And I would just run into people, and then it was 4 a.m. and whatever. And that was really fun, but it was really fatiguing by the end of it. It felt like it kind of started to feel really meaningless. And I didn't really ever have to be lonely or anything like that. I never knew what it was like to sit at home on a Friday night because I had nothing to do. Like I didn't really know that since I was like, you know, a dork in high school. And so
in your boxers watching Nickelodeon.
Which now that I say it out loud, I realize it's pretty self-inflicted. But I didn't know what it was like to be like that. And Austin was a big lesson in that, because I didn't even have a job there. And, You know, so much of your value can be tied to, you know, how much are you paid, which is messed up in its own ways, but it does, like, you know, in American culture, that can really feel like if I'm not contributing to society, I have nothing to talk about. What if somebody asks me, what do I do? And I just say, take an unemployment check. Like it was like a whole, so that was Austin through and through. It was like, I didn't even want to make friends because I felt like I didn't have anything.
Right.
And then Nashville, because I had the job lined up and because I was like a little bit more committed to it, and I had Austin as a point of reference, I was a lot more ready for it. And so, and I liked it. I really did. And I ended up making some of my closest friends, I mean, yourself included, in Nashville that I've ever made. And I was only here a year and a half. Like, And so I think it made me a lot more intentional about relationships in a way that I wasn't in Springfield. And so that was the thing that I really, really loved about. Austin was more like a shell shock.
Sure.
And then Nashville was like the real, was like actually doing it. And that's where I really felt it. And, you know, in Springfield, I wouldn't go on dates with women. Like, if I ended up dating somebody, it was like by happenstance. Like she and I would just both be at the same place enough times where all of a sudden, like, are we going out?
Yeah. I guess even in Springfield, like you said, like trying to date in a city that you're so known in can be challenging because all of your history goes with you in every space that you're in a city that you grew up in and went to school in, especially in your college years, right?
Well, it's just like, and Springfield is a college town,
right?
Like through and through. So yeah, if you are near college age and you're going to, and you have some regular bars that you go to, I feel like everybody would probably see like their entire dating history over the course of one Friday night.
Right.
You know, it just, that's how that would go. And so then to come to Nashville where I didn't know anybody, you know, and I'm like, oh, and then all, like everything just became more intentional. That,
yeah.
You know, it was good. It was good in that way. And so.
So, okay. You kind of brought this up too. Your music.
Yeah.
So you're on top of everything else that you do, you're a musician.
Yeah.
You write and play and you've performed.
Mm-hmm. I have.
These music songs of yours.
I have, yeah.
Now your band, currently you have a band
mm-hmm.
called?
Ski Lift.
Yeah. Ski Lift.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about that. Like what, why that name has that kind of style, genre of music that you're currently playing always been something you've leaned towards, you know? What's that musical journey been like for you?
Well, so I it's hard to say how it all starts. Like I think, you know, like every guy in the early 2000s, I learned how to play guitar because I felt like I, you know, needed to. It would make me look cool. But then it became like, it started as like, oh, this would look cool. And then it went to like a thing that I was obviously really into and passionate about. I was really nervous to sing in front of people ever. And then I first did a joke band. So that kind of like cracked the shell a little bit.
What was the joke band called?
It was called Creation Station.
Oh, wow.
It was not very funny. Wow. I think we got booed our first show.
What was the song that got you booed?
I legit can't remember. I just remember it. What makes it more sad is it wasn't like a crowd of boos. It was a single boo because there was really nobody watching us.
Someone's eating a chicken sandwich.
Like looking over their shoulder just to throw us a nice boo.
Boo.
Yeah, it wasn't good. We ended up playing a second show and that one did go a little bit better and people at least got the joke. But even still, it was just kind of silly. But it did. It kind of broke my nerves of that. Then I was in a screaming band. That also helped. I know. I know. I was the screamer.
You were the screamer.
I wasn't good at it.
So you were like under oath, but in Springfield.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we would have compared ourselves to Orchid or the Brother Brothers, but that's
fine. Oh, what?
But that's fine. If you want to call us under oath, that's fine.
It's fine, too.
No, it was... So we did that, but I was only in that band for like 6 months because I didn't know how to, there's like a way to scream you don't throw your throat out every time.
That's right.
I have no idea how to do that. And so I was just like on the verge of giving myself nodes my throat, like at all times. It's why I started drinking black coffee was because I was still working in marketing at that call center making phone calls. and I had to, and so I needed a voice because I was working at like 10 a.m. sometimes,
right.
But I would throw it out the night before. And so I wanted to wake up, so I'd drink coffee and I needed to clear my throat. So I didn't want cream or sugar or anything like that. And that's a little bit how that came to be. And then, so I did that for like 6 months and I was not very good at it, but it again kind of broke the nerves. And then I went in the complete opposite direction with my buddy Todd, who was also in that band, which was called Hospice for the Stars, by the way.
Oh, that's a perfect screamo band. That is perfect. You would have been perfect on AP Magazine.
Oh yeah, it was great. Yeah, I had the hair and everything.
Oh,
like the diagonal hair, interrupting my left eye. Yeah, it was great. So then, me and Todd, who was also in Hospice for the Stars, started what we were like. We need to start a folk band. That was our idea.
Naturally,
you know. That's how you do it. So it was the two of us. We started a band called Jesse James Wax Museum. And that's probably, of all the bands and music projects that I've done, that was the one I probably took the most seriously. Like, that was where we practiced the most.
Right.
It was like, you know, this would have been like mid-2000s. So it was whenever like big orchestral, like indie pop was a thing, like Decemberists and New Pornographers and things like that. And that's what we wanted to be. And so we're basically doing that vibe. You know, we had like a cellist. We had nine people in the band at one point.
Goodness.
It was crazy.
That's amazing.
It's wild to think that we like got that many college kids to a band practice regularly, like multiple times a week to get ready for shows and stuff. And it was cool. It was fun. We got to open for like Cursive and Starlight Mints were some of the bigger shows we did. But anyway, So I had that, and I thought, you know, I was just, but it was, I always had kind of realistic expectations of it. Maybe too realistic in the sense that I wouldn't ever try for more because of it. And so we got through the whole process. We finally got an album recorded. And then I think we maybe played like 5 shows after we got the album recorded, though. We just kind of quit. I know, it's funny. Now that we actually have something to sell, we have a way to make money off this. Yeah.
This is done.
We're just done now. Yeah. We're done. And so it just kind of came to a natural conclusion, but I still liked music, and I was just, and that was whenever I started messing with production more myself. And that's probably how Ski Lift came to be. So Ski Lift came to be because I have a friend named Abby Webster, who was also in Springfield at the time. She's now in, I think, Wyoming. Jackson Hole, Wyoming is where she's at the moment. But she was in Springfield at the time, and basically our singer, we had a female singer in Jesse James named Sarah, who moved up to Kansas City to be a teacher. And so then we stopped doing the 9-piece shows, and we started doing these like scaled back kind of acoustic, softer, or just not even acoustic, so I was still playing electric, but it'd be like a minimal show.
Right.
And then that's how Ski Lift came to be, was we basically created a sound out of that more minimal vibe that she and I were doing. And so then some songs that just didn't really, like Jesse James was going away. Everybody was either moving or just not interested in it anymore. And then she and I just kept tooling around with stuff until we made a EP. But we're very spaced out in the way we did it. We put something out in 2011 and then nothing. And then we put another thing out in 2018. But what's wild about that is the EP we put out in 2018 has like the most plays of anything I've ever made.
It's been amazing to see.
It's crazy. I've never had anything that successful. And it's like the least I've tried.
Which is such a weird thing with music, right?
Like, I agree.
Sometimes the thing you think, oh, this is, we've crafted this, we've worked hard at this, you put it out to the world, and then like crickets.
Yeah.
And then the thing you like, let's just do it.
Yeah. And I'm like proud of it, but this goes back to like, my wife is so big on the idea of just like, stop perfecting, just finish. You finish something. And so if you just finish it, put it out there, maybe it'll take, maybe it won't. Like Jesse James, we tried to perfect, but we put it out and no one cared.
Right.
And so this, it was just like, just put it out. And I'm like, okay, fine. And I did. And people cared. I mean, Spotify in particular has been really cool to us. Like, they just keep featuring it on playlists and stuff. And so, yeah, it's been cool. But it's very much like, I mean, it's a hobby. It's a, like a side thing. It's a lot of fun.
You're big music consumer as well as someone who is someone that creates in this field of art. So what's your take on what's happening even in music? Because I feel like there's a lot that's going on. I mean, here in Nashville and other cities like Nashville, there's a lot of the kind of indie, what I would call true indie, which is like independent artists, house shows, people who are just like getting, kind of going back to what we saw in the early 2000s and even the 90s, like loading up the van, going to little, you know, cities and like playing these house shows. Like, what's your like take on that as someone who in some ways lived through a version of that?
Yeah.
And now you're on the other side of it where it's like, I'm not really wanting to do that, but I'm doing this other thing.
Yeah.
And what's your...
Music's interesting right now. Like, it's because culture is just fun because it's always reacting to itself.
You know?
Especially like anything that's artistic at all, it always wants to be, you know, creative. It always wants to be innovative. It always wants to be a little bit on the cutting edge. So then as soon as something becomes too mainstream, it flips to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we've just come out of like a really, really big EDM, like, everything is like super produced, really, you know, it's all electronic and all this. And I think now we're seeing the big reaction to that. I mean, don't get me wrong, electronic music still exists, EDM's still around, all that kind of stuff, but you're seeing we're going back to like full on garage music, which has been, don't get me wrong, garage music's been hovering around in the background for a long time, but I think it's like really coming up to the forefront again.
Oh yeah.
And I think generally speaking, you know, prototypical, you know, rock is going to be like so fashionable. But what's cool about it is that now, like, it's always been such a male dominated space. It's really cool to see, like,
yeah,
like easily all my, like all of my favorite records of the past, like 2 or 3 years have been by women. And that's just neat. It's neat to see. It's like, I feel like we're having a proper resurgence of the 90s, but this time I think from a music standpoint, women are really leading the way.
Yeah. Cause I can remember my own me saying back when I was in school, college, and even right out of school, like, I don't really like female artists.
Yeah.
I don't really like female comedians. And now I'm like, I love female artists and I love female comedians. And it's like, it's the opposite. I don't know if that's just the way it's worked itself out or whatever, but it's been really interesting to see, like you said, it's just true. It's just been happening.
I think a big piece of it is just, you're seeing a whole generation of people that have been encouraged that you don't necessarily have to be this way or another way to participate.
Right.
And so I think you're seeing a whole generation of women that have just been really, really encouraged to participate and be involved and create and make things. And, you know, I think the attitudes of like, oh, I don't like women artists or I don't like female comedians or whatever, I think those attitudes have so been stomped out.
Right.
We're slowly clawing that away as a deterrent.
Which oddly enough brings us to back around to the fact that the whole thing, your whole work that you do now was kind of birthed from two females.
Yep.
Two sisters.
Absolutely, yeah.
So do you want to, I mean, for those that don't know, can you give a, like, here's how that whole thing started for them? And then,
sure.
And then even from that, even talk about how, me and my wife, who's a part of this, Emma, who's a part of that, was that like a natural, then I'll find a way to connect what I want to do with what they're doing and do my own thing? Or was there even some recruiting from their end? It's like, we really want Trey to come on and help us. Yeah. So kind of talk about some of that.
Sure. So the owners of A Color Story, and they're also the owners of A Beautiful Mess, Elsie Larson and my wife, Emma Chapman. They're the ones who found it. They're the ones who take the risks. They're the ones who do it. I am functionally like, I get to have the cool CEO title.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I am an employee.
Yeah.
And and so that's just, and if anything, I'm just like just excited to work for these two because they're a lot of fun. They just encourage, they really encourage creating in a way that I can't put into the best words right now, but they, like that whole idea of making creativity accessible is like, it's not a thing that we just recently like laid that vision statement out because we felt like you're supposed to have one or something, but
that's what they say.
Yeah. That's what they say. We just recently started laying that statement out and it's not so much like we just want to have a cool statement. Like that's something they've embodied their whole careers, if not their whole lives. And it has a lot to do with their mom. Their mom is amazing and just so encouraging. And like I come from so much more privilege than they come from, yet they're the ones building this empire, you know, hiring me. And I think it has a lot to do with that just unrepentant encouragement. Like they are just, it's crazy. And so they have this idea of like, you know what, you're never not good enough to participate. You're never like, right. You're never not good enough to create. If you want to make something, you can make something. And that's their mentality toward life, but that's also their mentality when it comes to business. And so because of that, we just try things. That's why A Color Story exists, is because they're like, we can, so let's just do it. It may not work, but and that's where Elsie and Emma are like, they're a real good pair because Elsie is kind of the dreamer and Emma makes it happen. Those are a little bit, that's their two, respective roles. Not to say that they don't both do a little bit of both, but that's probably where they lead the most. And so Elsie will dream up a big app idea, and then Emma will like figure out, all right, here's how this can happen. And that's how it all comes to life. So,
and so then how did it work for you to even get involved in this company? Like, cause you leave your job in Nashville, you move back to Springfield.
Yeah.
You kind of become married, a husband, start this life. And then like,
I'd back up a little bit because what happened was so Emma and I get together. I want to be near her. So I call, a contact from my old job at Noble she's now working for a new agency. And I'm just like, hey, do you have any open positions? And she's like, not right now, but we'll talk. And then we stayed in contact and she's like, hey, I might have a position to interview you for, come on in. So then I get the job back and I get a job back in Springfield. I'm working for an ad agency again when I move back to Springfield. Emma and I are just dating at this point. But I'm just so curious about their business because they're talking, at this point, it was just A Beautiful Mess. The app side didn't exist at all. And so they're just doing like, and A Beautiful Mess is like a women's lifestyle website. And I'm just hearing about the sponsorships that they're doing. And I work in advertising and I know how much that people pay for this and they're charging nothing for enormous impressions. They have all this traffic, they have all this. And I'm like, that's crazy. So I'm always like kind of interjecting and eventually they're just like, I think you should just work for us. And I'm just like, what? I mean, and it's like, no, we're going to put a salary together. You should definitely do it. And they like took me out to dinner one night and they're like, so, and we'd like talked about the possibility and it was basically
like, is there a place in Springfield where all the business dinners go down?
No, it's funny that this place is ironically out of business now.
Oh,
And so we're just talking, and in my mind, I think I'm still just, spitballing with them. But by the end of it, they're like, so we want to offer you a job. Do you want it? And I'm just like, So
do you even play the like, okay, this means I'm working for.
Yeah.
She's not your girlfriend.
Yeah, my girlfriend, not even
how
fiance.
Do I even like.
Oh, yeah.
Make sense of this? Or is it just an immediate like, yeah, like I definitely want to do this.
It was just, yeah, I'll be honest. I was nervous about it for a whole lot of reasons. The biggest one for me though, at the end of the day, was just the idea of how small of a company it was. And I was so used to, big stable companies, but in my mind, it's funny because I think of big stable companies, but the agency I was working for is now no longer in business. I got laid off from that other agency. The agency I worked for in Nashville, the first 2 weeks that they moved me here, got my new place. I'm doing it. This is like, first time I've like moved somewhere for a job.
Right.
And their main client, like if this client goes away, they go away.
Right.
Puts the business up for review. What they hired me to work on, they put that business up for review to be like, hey, maybe we're not going to work with you anymore.
No.
And I'm like, oh.
Oh,
so
shoot.
So it's funny that I thought that was more stable than working with them, because now this is the long,
because you were like, you won't fire me.
Yeah.
I make out with you.
Yeah. Well, okay. But my bigger concern beyond getting fired, though, I think they would be more than willing to fire me if I was doing a really bad job. my bigger concern was like, oh, what if it goes out of business or something? It's a small company. I don't know how this works. And so I remember talking to my dad about it. I wrote a long list of pros and cons. And then ultimately I'm like, no, this is of all the times to try this, I was 26 at the time. I'm like, this is the best time. I should do it. Go for it. Let's do it. And so I started with them first on sponsorships. I did that for 2 years. Then we hired somebody else to take that over. So then I could move over to apps full time.
Wow.
And then that became like a color story start. It started in 2016 and I was the only employee for the first year. It was just me and then like contract developers. We had this awesome guy named Matt who's out of Manchester that we worked with a lot. And and then we've slowly built up to now we're about, we just hired two more people. We're at 9 employees total.
Wow.
Which is crazy, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Huh. Okay, let's see. What else do we... Oh, here's what I'll ask you about before we get to... I want to get to like some rapid fire random questions that I've created.
All right.
We'll see how it goes. But we talked before we started recording about, you know, this idea of people getting into business with family and friends and that kind of thing. And I was kind of saying that's, in some ways, that's the only kind of business that there is. Like, I don't know if, I've never heard of, maybe it does happen where it's like, we were complete strangers and we started a business together, you know? So what, and you can talk generally, you don't have to give, you know, details or, but you've now since hired some friends.
Yeah.
You're working with your spouse. Like what kind of the general wisdom for people who are, we thinking about doing this business? Maybe it's a kind of business like you're doing, or maybe it's something else, but what's been the lessons that you have learned and been learning about getting into business with family and with friends and even your in-law, like in-laws too, right?
Yeah. I think it's, I mean, we hire friends and family a lot. You know, family, we're a little bit, actually, oddly enough, me being a family hire, we're a little bit touchier on hiring family because that can be tough. But yeah, we've hired friends and it's gone bad.
Because I can get rid of a friend. I can't get rid of a family member.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you're still going to be at Thanksgiving throwing salty looks.
Yeah,
a just, friend is like, I can just ghost you.
Yeah, we just
I didn't get your text.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. We can like meet up for drinks every 2 months.
Right.
Yeah. It's like it's possible to drift apart there. So family could be a little bit trickier, but ultimately, I think it can work really well. I think it can work really well. I just think communication is a must, and ultimately, business relationships have the exact same challenges that all relationships have, and that's communication. So like as long as you're addressing problems and you're talking about them in a healthy way and you're not stockpiling a whole bunch of grudges and then dumping them on people.
Right.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, it definitely adds a layer of complication to my marriage. It adds a layer of complication to my relationship with my sister-in-law. I've definitely had some of the more curt fights at work in this position than I have in others. But it's because we all care a little more. And I also believe that everybody is so sincerely looking out for each other. And so that's another piece of it. The thing that can become challenging about friends and family in the workplace, once you get to bigger organizations, I can't speak to that. I can appreciate how that can be a lot more complicated because there's more politics going on. But at a small organization like this where everybody's on the same page and you all you can communicate really regularly, the big thing is just making sure that you're still measuring your friends and family by the exact same standards that you're measuring everybody else.
Right.
And so, and in both directions, don't be too hard on them because of this, but also definitely don't be too soft
don't
on
be
them.
Too soft,
and so
right.
That's the thing, but I kind of agree with you in the sense that like, if you can make it work, it's a great situation.
It's a great situation,
Because you get to work with the people that you love. And I mean, working's cool and being productive is cool, but like at the end of the day, this is all about relationships. So if we're not if we don't get to have good relationships in life, what's the point?
Mm. That's good. Now I have to throw one more thing in before I get, I got to throw this in. So CEO, app developer, music man, and what probably some people don't know is that you, up until recently, were also a minister.
Yeah. A youth minister.
You were in charge of youth.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's weird. It's wild to think about. I don't know why they let me, but they did.
So, I mean, I just want to know what?
it's odd. Philosophy it took me away from Christianity and then brought me back into it. Like it kind of like it deconstructed it for me,
right?
In a way where, because I was not at all interested in the kind of the more bigoted Christianity that I was seeing start to happen.
There's bigots in Christian. What?
You know, I wasn't very interested in that. But I really like the purpose stuff. I really, because basically at the end of the day, you know, you can either choose that the universe is chaos or the universe is organized. And I chose organized. I like the idea of a universe on purpose.
Right.
And then the second thing was, okay, cool. That answers a big why question, but what am I supposed to do while I'm here? And that's where you get this awesome, teachings of Jesus, where he's just saying love. It's just that simple. If you boil it down to, I believe the universe is on purpose, and I believe that you should love while we're here. Those are some really awesome principles. And that was like, and I had a million things that I could talk about. And I think if you go to the Bible, and whenever you read the Bible through that lens, like knowing that that is the core of it, you can come out with just so many amazing lessons and so many cool things. And so that was a lot of how that all came. And then it was basically a church I went to when I was a kid. It was a Disciples of Christ. So, you know, split off from Church of Christ.
Yeah. Let's go.
We're just cool with instruments.
Yeah, well, now we use them too.
That's fine. Just like really good at those harmonies.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the best harmonies I've ever heard, Church of Christ. Yeah. We did some volunteer event, and so a Church of Christ came there, and they're like, all right, let's start. And like everybody has their own part as they're singing. I'm like, what? Like,
oh.
You guys don't all just sing one note badly? That's not how this works. Anyway.
Turn up the music.
So yeah, and then I got that. There was just a really amazing youth group. This would have been, I would have started it in like 2009 or 2010.
Yeah.
And then probably went on. And then I took the break when I left. But then when I came back, I did it for another couple of years. So all told, I probably did it for about 4.5 or 5 years.
Wow.
But just this, there's just this amazing youth group that was all just really excited. And it wasn't people who were being dragged there by their parents. It was just people who wanted to come on their own accord. And they all were just, they were just rad. I don't have any other way to say it. They're just so funny, so smart, and they just were really, and they were really curious about the concepts of just being kind to each other. They loved all that. They loved the concepts of purpose and all that. So it was just, I don't know. I like doing it a lot. I would not want to do it now. Just because I do think it can, I wouldn't want to do it as a main career, because I think it can carry, it can be diff. I think it's more, I'm not cut out for that, like navigating large organizations. I'm not cut out for that. It worked really well for a small church that paid me part-time, and I could kind of do anything I wanted. It doesn't work well whenever I have to answer to a whole lot of people. So I have nothing but respect for you and your ability to navigate it. Yeah. I think I would get a little short with people.
Who's to say I don't get short with people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're just better at it than me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That may be true. Okay. Let's go through a couple of these questions. And these, it's not really like rapid fire. It can be, but it'd be good if we could roll through them.
Sure.
We'll see. Who's the most unforgettable person you've met?
Besides Emma?
Yeah. Obviously Emma, your wife, but who else would be another unforgettable person that you've met?
I feel like all the answers are going to be family, because they're just, I mean, and this
That's
one,
not family. I'll
that's not
that.
Family. It has to be, not, okay, can't be family.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say you? Because it's wild the way that our friendship kind of came to be, and the fact that it just hung on and all this. Like, we had a really weird, like the way that we became friends and then the way that we just maintained. Everyone, you're just a character in and of yourself.
We're gonna quote you on that, and we're gonna use it as promo material for the podcast.
Okay.
The most unforgettable person. Patrick.
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 With a podcast.
Called Patrick.
Patrick. Of course. Yeah, we did meet. It was a very weird circumstance in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. And then I didn't hit up a lot of people when I came here, but I'm like, oh, I remember this guy named Patrick. He lives in Nashville. He'll be my friend. And you were.
And I were. Yeah. That's good. Without thinking too much about it.
Okay.
What would be three or four bands that have shaped your musical kind of career, and even larger, just your perspective and outlook.
Yeah. Incubus, number one. I was so in Incubus in high school. I can't.
Brandon Boyd, man.
I'm telling you, man. He had
Honey in the Voice.
And then once I started to get a little more serious about music, Radiohead.
Yeah.
And then just for the sake of like who I was the most into in college, it would have been a band called The New Pornographers.
Oh, yeah.
And then Vampire Weekend is probably my last one.
Like the new album?
Oh, yeah. I went back and forth like, is this the dorkiest album I've ever heard? Yes. But I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody put something up about one of the songs. Like, I can't tell if I love this song or if it sounds like it was written by the Wiggles. And I'm like, why can't the answer be both?
That's great. Why can't the answer be both? This is a random, I don't know why I thought of this question.
Yeah.
What's one food you wish you could stop eating?
I wish I could stop eating?
Yeah.
Right now, because I got my fitness goals, pad thai.
Oh,
it's
pad
just,
thai. It's very good.
It's so good.
But it's not working. And you're not like a, you're not an obese person.
No, I'm
you're,
not.
But you're getting yoked. You're a small frame. Trying to get trim.
Trying to trim it up.
I want these.
Are you
wanting to post more shirtless pictures?
I want are shirtless pictures, really. That's,
you're trying to be a Calvin Klein model?
Yeah. Yep.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Ooh.
Or song?
Right now, it's Goodbye Earl. That's probably my top.
That's a good song.
Yeah, oh, it's real good. I mean, it was Gangster's Paradise for a long time, but that became really tread ground. So, yeah, Goodbye Earl is my jam. And I'm trying to get into some Yellow Card.
Oh, that could be hard.
Oh, it's
Yellow
Card is
challenging.
It's harder than I thought. But I also, if I can get someone to do it with me, I want to do the Tom DeLonge part to I Miss You on Blink-182. That's another.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They got a new song out.
Do they?
Yeah.
It's probably not good.
Probably not.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, it could be.
Things.
We don't want any
yeah.
Blink-182 fans coming after us.
It could be great.
Unless they want to rate the podcast with 5 stars, and you're welcome.
Yep.
What's one book everyone should read?
Ooh, that's a trick. I bring this book up all of the time, and I think it's like 10 years old at this point, but Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers,
yeah,
is one of my favorite books to talk about. Like, it's just like all the little facts in it. It really deconstructs success. It really deconstructs, you know, why we are how we are. And the biggest thing it did for me though was like it made anything seem possible. Mm. All of a sudden, because it's so much about like, if you put time against something, you will be good at it. It's just that simple. Like that ultimately was the recurring theme of it. And I love that. So it's very, very good.
And then last thing I'll ask is like, what's the one, you know, you've now launched a couple apps, like we said, and even in launching albums, you've mm-hmm. launched a few albums now. What's one or two pieces of wisdom in this kind of, whether it's the tech side or whether it's the other just creative side in general, for those people who are like, I think I want to do some of this kind of work, or I'm thinking about pushing myself in trying something else musically, or I'm thinking about, you know, like what's something that if you could go back in time and tell yourself when you were getting started into that, what would be something you would say, hey, don't forget this, or you should really lean into this, or?
I would say when it comes to launching something,
mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, it's about marketing. And so, especially if you're having to do it on a small budget or on your own budget or whatever, look for those undervalued marketing plays. The problem is that what worked yesterday doesn't work tomorrow. And
right.
So you just always have to find that. Like with A Color Story, a big thing that worked really well for us, beyond the fact that we have the influencer angle where we networked with a handful of influencers to help us launch it. And now influencer marketing is much more of a known thing. But at the time, it wasn't as much. And so it was like Elsie and Emma were particularly well networked with that. But that can seem a little bit unattainable. Then the thing that really helped the app catch fire, though, was that Instagram ads had just started.
Right.
And so they weren't as expensive. And so we were able to get in relatively early and start, and on a much smaller budget, we were able to create some traction for ourselves, and traction that paid for itself. And so, you know, we were getting installs that we were paying, you know, we were paying half the cost for the install that we would get in return. So Wow. We were doubling our investment.
Yeah.
And that was just huge for us. So again, I just always be on the lookout for that undervalued marketing play, because that's how you're going to be able to do it on a budget. Because you're not going to be able to come out the gate doing TV ads, or some big mass thing.
Yeah.
It's like, try to find like, what's this thing I can do that's not, that a lot of people aren't doing just yet. Because if you just do what other people did, it's, people are sick of that and it won't work as well. But if you're able to find kind of a fresh take on something, it can take.
It's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I have one more. Can I have one more? I have one more question.
Yeah.
One more question.
Go for it.
I know we're over time probably. Okay. So you mentioned this a few times, which is this, social media influencers.
Yeah.
And in this, and we even talked a little bit about how Instagram's considering taking out of the app, seeing how many likes you get.
Yeah.
Right? But my question is, like, a lot of people have kind of a, maybe they have a perception of those that they would consider quote unquote Insta famous.
Yeah.
Et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who works in this world, who has gotten to meet and work with some of these folks who would be classified as, in people's mind, Insta-famous,
yeah.
What would be the thing that people, what would be the thing that they just wouldn't really, what are people getting wrong about? Like the shade or the hate or the overzealous whatever that they give towards people who kind of exist in this social media influencer world, because you work with them.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not looking for you to like tell on someone,
yeah,
but it's
no.
Like you generally can talk about the men and women you've met, you know, throughout the years.
I think the misconception is that people think influencers are trying to present their really beautiful photography as a snapshot of their everyday life. I think people really think that influencers think that they're tricking you, and everybody feels like, oh, I know that you staged this photo. I caught you. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. You notice how all the colors match? That was on purpose. Do you think the throw pillows are ever on the couch? I mean, come on. We swept off the Cheetos. Like Of course we did. Because I think that's a big piece of it. It's like,
right.
They're doing like so many, especially on Instagram. What you have are people that are really into photography, all of them.
Yeah.
Like they like creating a beautiful image. That's what they're not trying to show you real life. They're trying to create a beautiful photo. And it gets a little, and I can see how it gets a little bit confusing because the captions will be pretty personal sometimes or whatever, but that's not the point. The point is because they just want to take a cool photo. Like they're just like, and if they've made their house look really great, they're proud of it and they want to show it off and they want to show you the best that it's going to be. Like that old show MTV Cribs.
Right.
That's not how their house looks all the time.
No.
They're staging it to look nice for this thing because it's possible and they're proud of it and they like making things that look nice. So that's the biggest misconception I see, because I see so many people try to be like, oh yeah, so you just happen to be like looking beautiful outside that coffee shop. Like no. No, they waited until a bunch of people walked by, snapped the shot. One of my favorite,
that's good.
One of our favorite Instagrammers we work with, her name is Rosie Clayton, at R Clayton. She does the just big, bright colorful walls. She finds all these beautiful murals all across the world, really, and takes pictures in front of them. But not only that, like her outfit always coordinates with colors in the wall. So the whole thing is so, so planned and it's really methodical. And it's like every time I see her photos, I'm just, that's all I can think about is how she got the shot. Because I think sometimes people think they're like, oh, they had to try so hard to get this shot as if that's a bad thing.
Right.
Like, no, I mean, that's effort. That's talent. Yeah. Like it really is hard to get these things done.
Yeah.
And shout out to her wonderful husband, James, who's had to stand in the street probably more times than he's comfortable with to get the right frame.
The unspoken hero.
And so, but in all honesty, like how much planning and coordination she puts into all of that and it is a lot of work finding all of that. And yeah, she's made a beautiful feed because of it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that's it's the same thing for any kind of art. Like,
yeah.
There's effort and mm-hmm. the reason the person gets the attention they get is because they've put in the work, the effort, they've done what they needed to do to create something that's beautiful. And we don't throw the same amount of shade at the painter
or
at the musician, you know.
Well, that's the thing is like we throw no shade.
The actor, yeah.
Yeah. I think the one piece of it is that it's clear what you're... I think it's a little bit clearer with painting, acting, even like more commercial, like blatant commercial photography. It's more clear what you're looking at. And I think sometimes I think the reason why you see that reaction is because they felt tricked for a second and then they thought about it and then they get upset because they felt tricked. And so, whereas like, if you just come at it knowing like, hey, if you're following an Instagram account with really beautiful photos, they're trying really, really hard to do that. And it's okay that they do that, but don't measure your everyday life against that.
Sure.
Like that's ridiculous. Right. Like no, our life doesn't look like that at all. It's very gross. Like it's so gross. We have a
There's the quote.
We have a
we have a gross life.
We have a 13-year-old pug who cannot stop pooping. Like it's true. it just falls out of his butt.
Yeah.
So it's just like at any given time, like while Emma is taking a shot, there very well could be a piece of pug poop out of shot because she just hasn't noticed it yet.
And it's truly an ad for you why you should get a small dog because the poops are small.
Yeah. Yeah, much more manageable. Well, that's a good
way to end.
That's a good note. That's a good note to go out on.
All right, take it, Trey. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for doing this. This was fun.
Peace.
Sweet.